Parshas Zos HaBracha, the Kavshin Ayin Daled, it goes like this. We all know that there are 613 mitzvos. That's a famous concept. The concept is brought up everywhere. It's especially brought down. The place where it's first brought down in Gemara is Makos Chav Gimel Amud Beis. Brought down in Makos Chav Gimel Amud Beis. 613 mitzvos altogether from the beginning to the finish. The idea is represented by the Midrashim. It's mentioned by the Rishonim, and that's the famous Machlokism, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Smag. They all argue, what are the 613 mitzvos? There are about 550 that everyone agrees upon. 550 are agreed upon by everybody. And then the other ones are like, some say this, some say that, and they each knock out the others. And it's interesting because it seems that there's no muskum opinion. Now that's crazy. If there are 613 mitzvos that we have to keep, wouldn't you think we'd know them? Wouldn't you think that's what they are? That's number one. Number two.
Everybody agree there's 613.
Yeah, because of a Gemara. Okay. Can't argue on the Gemara, so everybody agrees with the 613 part. Plus, if you hold that what the Rambam says is not a mitzvah, right? Let's say there's something the Rambam says that's not a mitzvah. For example, the mitzvah of Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, living in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban says it's a mitzvah. The Rambam says it's not. There is no such mitzvah. So is there no mitzvah at all to live in Eretz Yisrael according to the Rambam? It's very hard to say. I mean, you're basing yourself on Pesukim. There's something, and it seems that there's got to be something. The question is, what exactly does it mean? Also, here's another thing. Okay, question number three. There are many parshios in the Torah that have no mitzvahs at all. And in fact, from Bereishis until you get to Parshas Bo, there are a total of three mitzvahs. It's very unlikely that the whole Torah is given to us in order to give us 613 mitzvahs, and they're not spread out at all. That they're really relegated to Parshas Bo, Parshas Mishpatim, Parshas Emor and Kedoshim, Parshas Re'eh and Shoftim and Kiseite, and then sort of the others will have one here and another one there, and something like that. It's strange. I am skipping all of Vayikra. Vayikra has a ton of mitzvahs in itself.
Stranger that there's in Devarim as it goes back and recounts everything, that there's not a complete list and recounts
that goes through everything. That would be the most obvious. So it's strange. Why would it be that way? Those are three major questions. And there's obvious questions. They're questions that you could ask when you're in kindergarten. They're the simple questions. There's 613 mitzvahs. What are they? Well, you see, it's machlokes. We're not really so sure. What does that mean? What do we get out of that? So the Gruz says that there's an easy way to understand this. We have to look at it a different way. Every word, and really, it's not that. It's every letter of the Torah is a mitzvah. Every single letter and every single word is a mitzvah. Not only to learn it, which is also true, but just within that letter, within the word, there is a representation of some type of mitzvah. There's something that's there that represents a mitzvah. That's the famous line. They say that in Parshat Hazino there are 620 words to represent the 613 mitzvos and the Sheva mitzvos B'nai Noah. That's what it's supposed to be. In the Aseret HaDibros, there are supposed to be 614 letters. I haven't counted it myself in years. I'm not positive. But 614 letters to represent 613 mitzvos, and then an extra mitzvah that's supposed to be Durabanan, to listen to their Durabanan. So each one of them are supposed to be represented by that. And there are Svarim that are written how each letter of the Aseret HaDibros represents the 613 mitzvos, and how they represent each one, Lefi, the Rambam, that's there. But the Gra says it's clear. The 613 mitzvos are not individual mitzvos, and that's it. The 613 are shorashim, the roots, the main ideas and the categories of what the mitzvos are supposed to represent. And then there are tons of other mitzvos that can be learned from everywhere. There are tons of mitzvos that just how to act and what to do and where there is to go and stuff like that. Those are also mitzvos. You can always say, saying it simply put, right? To be sit down in a shul is a mitzvah. What mitzvah is it? What mitzvah is that on? Ashrei Yoshvei Beisecha. Praiseworthy are those who sit in your house. That's not a mitzvah. That's not a mitzvah in the Torah. It's not, but you can understand it from certain concepts that are brought up in the Torah. And that's the idea behind it, that sitting in a Beis Medrash would be a mitzvah. Not one of the Shorashim, one of the 613, but there are such things as mitzvahs. You say, I say it to my kids all the time, who wants to do a mitzvah? Me. Hopefully, they're all saying me. Right? They all jump up and do it. What's the mitzvah? possibly is under Kibbut Avaim, possibly under Gemilas Chasadim. See, those are Shorashim. Gemilas Chasadim is a Shorash. Within Gemilas Chasadim, there is going to a wedding in Misameach Chasim Rekala. Within that, there is going to be Mevaker Kolon, going to be Malava Amais, or going to, when a person passed away, then you're going to be Menachem Abel. All those are under the category of Gemilas Chasadim, but they're not separate mitzvos. That's the idea behind it. It's a mitzvah, but it's not one of the 613. That's it, even. So all they're arguing about, all the argument is between the Rambam, the Ramban, and the Sman, they're all agreeing that what the others are saying are good ideas. They're great things to do, and they are mitzvos in that sense. But are they one of the 613 Shorashim? Are they the ones that are in charge of everything else? Are they the ones who are the roots and the main part of every other mitzvah? That we're saying, no. There are 613, and here's the Rambam's view. Here's the Ramban's view. Here's the Sman's view. That's their ideas. And then everything else that you can think of fits into those categories in some way, shape, or form. This is why the Torah is compared to wood, to an eitz. It's Gemara and Tainus and Davog. Oh, sorry. But it's called an eitz. Eitz chayim yil machazikim. But the reason why is because every tree has its roots. And then there are branches. And from the branches grow fruits. The roots are the 613 mitzvos. The trunk and the branches that grow out from it are what we're able to make out of it. And the branches are numerous. And the branches go all the way. And they create fruits, which is the schar, the reward that we get in Olam Haba. That's the idea. This is the brother of the Gur Rav Avram, the brother of the Gur who said that. That's the idea behind it. But to get really into this, there's an amazing part at the very end. There are altogether 674 parshios in the Torah. 674 parshios in the Torah. What do I mean by parsha? So you see that little samach over there that they have in this, right? And then the little pays that you see in certain places. A fay means it goes open until the end of the line. That's called a psucha. Okay? A samach is called a stuma. That's just a little bit of space, right? About a word and a half. And then they start reading again, right? At the end of parshios, there's a pay. A larger space in between one parsha and the other. And every parsha has a space between one and the other, except for one parsha. One parsha is connected to the other one. Vayechi, correct. Vayigash Vayechi. We got a balka right here. The Vayigash Vayechi goes straight in. That's the only parsha that goes like that. Everything else has a space. Vayigash Vayechi does not have a space. All together, if you count up all the different spaces in the Torah, they're all together 674. 674. Now, if you exclude the end of parshas that have to be there anyway, the end of parshas, and also the ones by the Haloska, you know, by Yehibin Soharon, where there's the backward nuns, where there's those backward nuns right inside there, which also is supposed to be a separate parsha in and of itself. That means altogether, if you take those, you can subtract 54 altogether. Because how many parshios are there in the Torah? 54 altogether, right? So that means there's 53 spaces in between. But there is none between Vayigash Vayichi, so that makes it 52. And then you add on the 2 by Vayib and Soharon and parts of Aloska, that's 52 plus 2, that's 54. 674 minus 54 is 620 to represent the 613 mitzvos and 7 mitzvot Bnei Noah. Now that would be great in and of itself. That's just like a nice little gematria, and that's good.
I would think those are the most important spaces.
Because those have to be. Those have to be. The psuchas and the stumas within the parshios, inside the parshios themselves, are only 620. Now that would be good in and of itself. But the Gra goes on. Altogether there are 365 stumos and 255 psuchos. All together. So he says the following. Stuma means to close off, means to stop yourself, to not do something. Psucha means to open up the door, to allow yourself in to go do something, right? The mitzvot atzei are represented by the psuach, the pei. The mitzvot los atzei are represented by the samach, by the stumas. So that means 365 los atzeis, 365 stumas in the Torah. 255 psuchas for the 248 mitzvot atzei and the sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. Those 248 plus the 7, those represent the psuchas of what you have, the assays to do, and those are for the lava themselves. Now, to go a little bit further, we all know the famous line of Chazal. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. This is written in the Zohar, and it's quoted by every Chassidish Sefer you've ever seen in your life. 600,000 Jews, 600,000 letters in the Torah. There's a problem. There aren't 600,000 letters in the Torah. There are 304,805. Okay, I did not do that by computer. I'm taking it from Sfar. Okay, so 304,805 altogether. That's the amount. The problem is, how do we understand the Zohar? Zohar says straight out 600,000 letters. How do we understand it?
Rashi.
It's a couple answers. Some answers. The Bnei Yehoshua likes to answer that we might not be counting the letters themselves, we might be counting the letters and their targum. That Mikra the Targum. And if you add up the letters of the Mikra, of the Chumash, then you add up the letters of the Targum, that equals 600,000. I don't know anyone who's actually done that, and I haven't yet had the time to sit down and count them all, and I'm a little afraid of messing up right in the middle and be like, oh, what am I up to? I'm really afraid of that. Yeah, I'm assuming you could probably get it through there. I'll tell you why I'm scared of the computer in a second. But either way, altogether, he says that 600,000, that's the Pnei Yehoshua. That's one. There are other answers up on it. Yelpo's answers, there's a lot of different answers. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, you know what? I'm going to answer my own way as well. He said, you know, there are letters that are comprised of other letters. And he proves this from the Rambam. The Rambam says that if you find a 10-letter word in the Torah, or under 10, or over 10, and you run out of room on the line, then you can finish it off on the next line. Okay. And he goes on and he explains what it means. Chutzlut, Shuran, inside the Shur, whatever it is. And he goes through. So Yaakov Kamenetsky asks a simple question. Is there a 10-letter word in the Torah? The Rambam says, if you have a 10-letter word, figure out the Torah. Is there a 10-letter word in Tanakh? Is there a 10-letter word in Tanakh? So he says, there's one. Lemishbecho Seichem. Okay, which is mentioned in two different Lemishbecho Seichem, which is mentioned in two different places. Now the problem is, Lemishbecho Seichem is Lamed Mem, help me with this, Shin Pei Ches Vav Samach Yud Hei Mem. That's 10 altogether, right? Works out well. The problem is, both places where we say the word Lemishbecho Seichem, one is by Noach, the other one I didn't write down, where in both places it's written without a, without a vav. That doesn't work out well. Without the vav, it's only 9 letters. So what does the Rambam mean? So the answer could be, possibly, that the way that it's understood is, there's a Mari Kera that says on that pasuk, one is chaser, one is moed. Both of them appear in our Sefer Torah to be chaser. They're both 9 letters. But it could be one of them in one Mitzvah has 10. The Rambam had it as a 10-letter word, and therefore, he wrote there and he found a 10-letter word. But Rabbi Yaakov asks. But the Rambam said if you find a 10-letter word or more, there is no 11-letter word. There's no such thing as an 11-letter word in all Tanakh. It definitely doesn't exist. You can't even find a 10-letter word, let alone an 11-letter word. So how do you have it? What do you say to that? And he says, according to his cheshbon, he thinks there's only 2 9-letter words, Lemishbecho Seichem and Lemishbecho Seichem. And those are the only 2. And there's no others. She said, so what? How do you understand this? How do you go? So he said, this is my answer. If I had to answer, this is what I would tell you. Letters, some of the letters in the Torah are comprised of multiple letters. For example, an Aleph is made up of a Vav, and a Yud, and a Yud. So an Aleph is really not one letter. It's really 3 letters. Right? That's how it is. But if you look at a Mem Sofis is really a combination of a Resh and a Resh. It's 2 Reshes combined to make 1 letter. So really, that's 2 letters. Says Rabbi Yaakov, possibly, right, it could be that the way that we're understanding this is that some letters are comprised of 2 letters. And if you count up all those letters together with the Yuds and the Vavs and everything like that, then you'll come out to 600,000. And that's what the Zohar meant. Said he doesn't know if the Zohar is exact, if it's 600,000 exactly, or maybe it's a little bit over, a little bit under, and it's rounding off. But that's the idea of what 600,000 is. And that's the idea of what he's trying to say. It's a brilliant answer. That the answers are, there are 600,000 full letter combinations in the Torah. That's the way that it is. It's a great answer, but it's just an unbelievable idea. It's an unbelievable idea that he goes through. He then goes through everything. Rabbi Yaakov is crazy. He goes through a bunch of other things, and numbers, and how they work through all the letter, word combinations. He's nutty. But that's that. All right, let's get to a different part of the Torah. We're going to spend most of our time over here. It says by Moshe Rabbeinu, the lo kum navi od b'Yisrael kemoshe. There never was, it sounds weird wording. The wording is, there will never be another navi in Yisrael like Moshe. Actually, it's O Hashem, panim al panim, that knew God face to face. Now we understand what that means. No navi ever equaled what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do. It's not possible. But Chazal make a drush. You know what the drush is? B'Yisrael lo kum. among the Jews there never was a person like Moshe Rabbeinu. But Umos Olam come. By the other nations of the world there was a man like Moshe Rabbeinu. Umanu, and who was it? Who was the man in the other nations that was like Moshe Rabbeinu? Bilam, says the Gemara. So Pnimiya Karm asks, what? Are you serious? Is Bilam? Bilam is like Moshe Rabbeinu. What is the Havamina that Bilam is anywhere near the level of Moshe Rabbeinu? How could it possibly be that Bilam is anywhere close, equal to Moshe Rabbeinu? How is that possible?
He could have gotten to that level.
Great call. I'm going to get to this later with Moshe Rabbeinu, but the Rambam says about Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam says that anyone can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. The wording is anyone can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you're saying their abilities, their potential, everything like that, in theory the Rambam holds that anyone should be that way. Not just Bilam.
Doesn't the Rambam also say that in order to attain Nefuah you need to be born with a certain...
Not that I know of. No, absolutely not. You do need character traits, 9 character traits, but he does not say you have to be born that way. Not there.
I'm talking about greatness in terms of, like, you know,
piety. Yeah, he definitely says that.
But in terms of Nebuah, maybe that's what he's referring to by Bilam. If Bilam has to reach the level of Nebuah of Moshe,
anybody could. Why can't anybody? That's really the lesson. Maybe that's the... You're right. Maybe the Rambam is saying that. Maybe you're right. But that's our question. Was there... Then why was Bilam Zocha? What did Bilam do to be Zocha?
Is such a power of speech.
What?
Their
power of speech. But still, Lokum Navi owed be Yisrael Kamoshe. And we say, but Umos come. There was a Navi like him, and it was Bilam. So we say, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that describes what's going to happen by the times of Mashiach, and describes it as Bas Kama Be'ima, that a daughter will get up against her mother, speak with chutzpah and azus in front of her mother. That in the times of Mashiach, there will be a lot of chutzpah, and the daughter will get up in front of her mother and say, Mom, I think you're wrong. And that's going to happen. So the word come is a lashon of azus. So listen to this. Among the Jews, there is no Jew who will get up and say, I'm like Moshe Rabbeinu. Because no Jew will have that azus pun. But among the nations, there is a man who considered himself as great as Moshe Rabbeinu and said he was as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, even though he wasn't. And who was that? That was Bilam. And that's what it means by Lokum. By the Yisrael, we wouldn't even dream of thinking that way. Nobody would think to equate themselves as Moshe Rabbeinu. But by the Yomos, there is somebody who equates himself that way, and that was Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the idea behind it. That was Bilam, I'm sorry. Yeah. Rabbi Kiva was great in Torah, but definitely he didn't have Nebuah. Not Nebuah at all. He had Ruach HaKodesh, but something like that. A good question, though. Why can't we be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu? Why aren't we allowed to be that great of a Navi? I mean, what's the reason why? I'm sorry? Aptitude. Okay, so why can't we gain that aptitude? Why can't we? I mean, listen, if we have Bechira, right? If we're allowed to choose everything, why are there limitations on how great we can be? I want to be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. Why is there a limit in my potential? I want to be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. Why can't we? If I want to do it, why can't I do it? The Torah is telling us, you can't. There's nothing.
Even greater than that, why do we say each generation goes down a peg?
You read it the Doros.
Yeah.
Then what does you read it the Doros mean? That's already another lesson for another time. But
say that when Moshe was born, there was a light in the house.
For sure.
And he had a head start.
See, that's really what Binyamin was saying. Yeah, that's really what Binyamin was saying, that he was born in a certain way, and there are certain people that will be born the way that nobody else has a fair advantage. I hear that. Why? Why is that so? Why was Moshe Rabbeinu like
more than Adam Arisha?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't exactly have it easy, guys. He lived in the palace among the Egyptians, who were full of znus and were terrible people. He lived in the palace. Granted, he did go home to Amram and Yocheved. That's how he learned Torah, right? But I mean, he was living in the palace, living among non-Jews for 20 years. And then he ran away from Egypt and was gone for 60 years. And only after that time did he get his first nevuah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Sneh, at the age of 79. So we're not talking about, like, oh man, this guy was like privileged from birth. This guy had sort of a hard life growing up, and nonetheless became the person that he became. But
if there was a nevuah greater than Moshe, it's not really fair to Moshe with that example.
He was a unique case.
If we could always, if you could always say, like, well, I want to be better than him. Well, I'm sure Moshe wanted to be better than his forefather.
I agree.
Everybody wants to be better. So
I hear you.
That there's, like,
so it's a different way of looking at it as a stopover. Yeah, for sure. I understand that. But most of us would have failed miserably at that. Living in the palace, you kidding me? Okay, you have a choice. You can be in the palace getting everything you want and then all the znus you want versus going home and learning Torah from Tati and Ima. I'm not so sure everybody would have made that choice.
Yeah, I probably would have ordered a pizza.
Ordered. I'm not so sure. I don't know if that. I don't know if we would have made those choices and we'd be put in those positions somehow. But that's what saying. Okay, the truth is, we can act like him. We can do great deeds like Moshe Rabbeinu, that for sure. Possibly we could even be equal in great deeds. Possibly we could be. But there's one way that is absolutely impossible for us to ever be like him, and it's not necessarily our fault. But the pasuk says, you will never be like Moshe Rabbeinu for one reason. You can never give the Torah to the people. You can never be Mizakeh the Rabbin like Moshe Rabbeinu was. You won't have a Torah Yehuda Avdi. It won't exist. It doesn't exist. There can be a Torah Moshe Avdi and that's it. It will never be attributed or given over to anybody else. So there is a limitation, just simply put, because you weren't Moshe Rabbeinu at that time. You cannot now ever be that great as Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, can you be as great in your deeds? Maybe. I don't know about Nevuah, although the Ksav Sofer sort of leaves that wide open. He does not say you can't be as great in Nevuah, which is strange. It seems like that. But you will never be great in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was great, that he was Mezakeh the Rabbin. Maybe it's just that. Since he was Mezakeh the Rabbin, and he gave all these great things to the people, the Torah and everything that he had, maybe that's why he became a greater Navi. His level of Nevuah was raised by the amount that he gave to the people, and we don't have that ability to give to the people that much, which means Memela, we will never be that big of a Navi. Which means a normal person on their own will never get to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, even Moshe Rabbeinu himself. But because Moshe Rabbeinu was Zocha to be able to give the Torah, and thus was Mezakeh every future generation to be able to learn Torah, thus he was given a schus to be able to become greater and greater in Nevuah to the level that he was at, and we can't do that because we can't give the Torah. So it's just a simple idea of what we can.
From Moshe Rabbeinu, from that point on, are all connected to Moshe Rabbeinu's Neshama.
True, that's for sure true.
And since that's the case, in essence, a little bit of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay, I agree with that, but we will never equal his stature. We'll have a little bit of him, but we'll never be at his stature.
But in essence, we are a piece of
him. No, that's not an essence. That's not an essence. We might have a piece of him, but that's not him. That's not it. That's not it. Timing is everything. Yeah, 100%. I agree that timing is everything. Okay, then another thing. The next pasuk, it says, no one will ever be like Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo kam navi od v'yisorkim Moshe. Asher yidol Hashem panim al panim. Then listen to what it says. L'chol ha'osis v'amosim. Asher shlachol Hashem la'asos perek Mitzrayim. For all the signs and the wonders that God sent him to do in the land of Mitzrayim. Now I grant you, the Makos were awesome. Kriyas Yam Suf was unbelievable. Now it doesn't mention the mun over here. It only says Be'eretz Mitzrayim l'paro l'chol avada v'lechol arzo. Okay, it does not mention anything about the Midbar. So we're only considering here the Makos, maybe the signs that he did of the snake, you know, the staff turning into a snake and the blood and his hand turning into, you know, Shelek, so Ratzka Shelek, maybe that, and Kriyas Yam Suf. That's what we have over here. The question on that is, there have been unbelievable people that have done crazy motzim. In fact, Kriyas Yam Suf, although we never had Kriyas Yam Suf, we did have Kriyas Yarding. Right after that, 40 years later, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, Yoshua split the Jordan River. He split the Jordan River. Now, granted, it might not have been as awesome as Kriyas Yam Suf was, but there definitely was a Kriyas Yarden. Elisha and Eliyahu HaNavi both split waters. They both split a massive lake or a sea. They both were able to do such a thing. In fact, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, a Tana was able to do something. Forget about a Navi. A Tana was able to split the river. There was a mice that happened there. I'm sorry?
They had the Torah.
Good. That's actually extremely impressive. Yeah. That's the answer.
Sorry.
You just gave it away. Well, I was leading up to a climax here. You can't let me do that. I'm like building it up. I'm getting to the crescendo, and then right then, you just threw us down into the abyss over here. The answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to get on this level without the Torah. Without being given a Torah to be Mekadesh you. He was able to do unreal miracles in Mitzrayim before he had received anything. He was able to do unbelievable things, crazy things that nobody could ever imagine. That was what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do. Us, because we have the Torah, of course we're able to do it. With Torah you can do anything. That's the line, that's the exact line that Ksav Sofer uses. Of course you can do it. You can split the sea. You can make unbelievable things. You can make a golem. You can do whatever you want. If you have the Torah, you have the ability to do anything. But without the Torah, you don't necessarily have it. It says that Bezalel was able to be Mitzarit the Osios. He was able to join in the letters of the Mishkan to create literally worlds. Bezalel had the ability to create worlds. He had the ability to do something through Kabbalah or whatever he was able to know. So is that greater than Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu never created a world. Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't even attribute to him that he had the ability to create a world. And the pshat is, in a way, yeah. But the pshat is exactly. Moshe Rabbeinu may have, after he received the Torah, to be able to do it, but there's no praise after that. After that, the praise goes to other people. Wow, Bezalel could do that. Moshe, of course he could do that. But Bezalel could do that. Once you receive the Torah, then obviously Moshe Rabbeinu could do anything. But before he received the Torah, he was the conduit to allow these great miracles to have the whole osos v'amosim. That, no one will ever get up like Moshe Rabbeinu. Because everybody else will need to have some type of madriga of the Torah, to have the chosen nation behind him. They need to have that in order for this to work. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. I'm sorry? Moshe Rabbeinu made it happen through Aaron. You're talking about the Makos, in other words, right? Maybe even the Osos were done by Aaron. Aaron's staff, at least. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who called it. Remember, it's not just that something crazy happens. It's that Moshe Rabbeinu said this would happen, and then it happens. That's the only time a miracle is mentioned in the Torah. Miracles mentioned in the Torah, not when it just happens, but when Hashem says, here's what's going to be, and then it happens that way. That's why the Torah specifically mentions the miracle of Sarah giving birth at the age of 90, even though that was seemingly impossible, because Amalek called it, said, next year you'll have a child, and she did, as opposed to Yocheved. How old was Yocheved when she had Moshe Rabbeinu? Going to the Medrash? 127. So why not mention that miracle? That's an awesome miracle. The answer is, it wasn't prophesied. If it's not prophesied, it's not mentioned in the Torah. That's the Ramban and Parshas Bo. The famous Ramban and Parshas Bo. So it's not mentioned over here. Okay, our last little part is about the Chofetz Chaim over here. When the Chofetz Chaim passed away, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman got up and said in his Hesed that the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, it's Hilchos Tshuva, Parakei Halacha Beis, Kol Adam Roi Lios Tzadik Kamosha. Every person in the world is roi to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, that's what he says. Everybody could be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, that's strange, but don't we say over here nobody will ever get up like Moshe Rabbeinu ever again? So is the Rambam going against the Rambam goes against the Gemara quite a bit. That we're okay with, because we figure out different gears of this and that and the other. But here, that's fine, right? Here you can't have another text. Can't go against this. How does the Rambam argue on the Torah? How can the Rambam go against the Torah? I used to have my Rebbe Rav Asher Arieli used to always say in shir. He said, "Why doesn't the Torah say like that? Why doesn't the Gemara say like the Rambam instead of saying why doesn't the Rambam say like the Gemara?" Okay, anyway, it was a joke. Anyway, but don't we say it's a Rebbe joke? It's just have to like sit with you for a little bit, and then eventually you get it, and you're like, oh, I got it. Anyway, it's got to be that. Okay. But don't we say over here that no one will be like Moshe? Okay, so it's true. It's true. We will never be like Moshe Rabbeinu in all of his bechinos. And that's true. Even the Rambam's maskim that there's no way it's going to happen. Nonetheless, there was something that Moshe Rabbeinu was known for that we can be known for. Look at what it says over here. It says over here, and really it's not over here where it mentions it more than anything else, but it says, I'm finding it, I'm sorry, hold on 1 second. Vayomas Shom Moshe Eved Hashem, Be'eretz Moav Al-Pi Hashem. Moshe died there, in Eved of Hashem, in the land of Moav Al-Pi Hashem. So too in Yoshua. It says, Vayiachre Moshe Eved Hashem. Describes him as an Eved of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why is he an Eved of Hashem? What does Eved Hashem mean? What does Eved Hashem mean? No, can't be. That's not an Eved Hashem. A servant, right? Slave, who does everything his master tells him to do. But you can't do that after death. The term Eved Hashem cannot apply to a person in death. It can only apply to a person during his lifetime. So, what the Chofetz Chaim, what Rebbe Chanan Wasserman was asking is, that how could you apply the term Eved Hashem to Moshe twice after he already died, if at that point he is no longer an Eved Hashem? So the answer is that you're right, an Eved while he's alive is working for his master. But there's another aspect here, there's another point. We all know, Ein Kinyan LeEved Below Ravo. An Eved cannot make an acquisition without his master. And so too, Kol Masha Kona Eved, anything that the master acquires, Kona Ravo. His master gets as well. Meaning, you are nothing. You work for your master. You are your master's human being. You literally consider yourself your master's everything. You are entirely under there. Moshe Rabbeinu's essence, as it were, was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. He didn't believe he was anything at all. He didn't believe that he had anything. That's why we call him the Anav Mikol Adam. He literally considered himself HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all it was. Nothing other than that. If he was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he'd do it. And if it wasn't for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he wouldn't do it. Everything he didn't like was for Hashem. And that aspect of life life can be accomplished by any Jew, and that's what the Rambam is saying. Any Jew in the world can be called an Eved Hashem after his death. How are you an Eved Hashem after your death? Because everything that's yours always belonged to God, even your body, even after death. Everything you own, always, your whole life, you were somebody who gave everything you had, even after death, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And anybody can be that way, says the Rambam. If you do things l'shem shamayim and not for your own stomach, then you can be an Eved Hashem as well. And that's what the Rambam means. You can't be like Moshe Rabbeinu in a Navi aspect. Maybe you can't even be like Moshe Rabbeinu in the greatness aspect. We're not given that ability. We weren't given the abilities, as Shmuley said before. None of us were born in a huge light, came in, except for me. None of you were born with a huge light in the hospital. Funny, right? Yeah, either way, there was, with a huge light in the hospital at the time when you were there. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. It really doesn't happen. So if that doesn't happen, how are we supposed to be like Moshe? The answer is to be like an Eved Hashem. And then he described the Chofetz Chaim. He was the perfect Eved Hashem. Everyone knows the famous Dybbuk story, and I'm sorry, I meant to bring the Dybbuk story. I meant to have it right here. I was supposed to read it all the way through. The famous Dybbuk story where the Chofetz Chaim was not involved, but he sent over Reb Naftali Trupp and the Panovich Rav to go take care of. There was supposedly a girl who had a Dybbuk within her, and the Dybbuk was speaking with a strange voice without moving the lips of this little girl, and the girl was unbelievably sick. And they came to speak to it. And among the other things that were there, says the Chazon Ish, here's the mussar you take from this story. They asked the Dybbuk if they heard of the Chofetz Chaim. And the Dybbuk answered, of course I've heard of the Chofetz Chaim. He's considered like a Tana in this generation. That's what the Dybbuk said. So they say, what do they say in Shemayim about the Chofetz Chaim? Okay, that's what they said. Rav Chanan Wasserman said that the answer that the Dybbuk gave, he wasn't there, Rav Chanan. Rav Chanan does quote the story. He was around at the time. And it is in Kovitz Mamarim, if anybody wants to look it up. In Kovitz Mamarim from Rav Chanan. They say that his hasmada b'Torah, there's nobody else who has such hasmada, sits and learns without stopping. That's the praise of the Chofetz Chaim and Shemayim. That's the praise that he gets. So you're right, we won't be able to copy the Chofetz Chaim in many, many aspects. None of us here are going to be able to write a Mishnah Berurah. We just don't have that ability to write a Sefer on Shemiras HaLashon, or to not hear Lashon Hara ever, like the Chofetz Chaim never heard Lashon Hara ever. I don't think anybody here is going to be on that level. That's almost impossible. But you can be like the Chofetz Chaim to use every second that you have available to be able to learn a Torah. And when there's available time, you utilize it and you don't waste it. That you could be able to Chofetz Chaim. That anybody could do. That's not an impossibility. You could become Asmidim. That's what Rav Chanan Wasserman said at the Hesped. He said, we may not be able to be like Moshe Rabbeinu, but we can act like an Eved Hashem. Then he said, I'm not even so sure we can act like an Eved Hashem, but the Chofetz Chaim was an Eved Hashem. And let's try to emulate the Chofetz Chaim. How do you emulate the Chofetz Chaim? Hasmod. Learn whenever you can. You have an extra time, you have a little bit of extra time, you try to learn during that time. You get those little seconds, you literally steal time away, that's how you can become like the Chofetz Chaim, and that's how you can become that type of person. So let's chazer. We had very quickly, we spoke over the difference of the 613 mitzvos, how there are shorashim and then different aspects between each one of them. Then we said that kum, lo kum od, means Bilam will get up and say that he's as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. Then we said, we cannot be like Moshe Rabbeinu because we couldn't give the Torah. And simply put, we don't have the ability to give the Torah. Then we said, even though he did great miracles, right? Other miracles were equated. That's true, but he did all these miracles before the Torah was given. And then the Chofetz Chaim. We should emulate his asmada. That's what we can do right now, and that's what we learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great